Anderson heaving one down the sideline, and he's got Cass Allen.
Listening to the Bruin Bible. This is your host, Will Decker, bringing you UCLA football content all throughout the year for LA Football Network.
What's up, Bruin Bible listeners? This is your host, Will Decker. We are brought to you today by the good people at BetOnline. It is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports contests and events with first-to-market odds and lines. Find reviews and news for every league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, this is MMA and boxing, esports, and even golf. I'm going to be placing some big-time bets this year. NFL, we're talking about Rams-Chargers Super Bowl. That's my prediction. Going to be placing some future odds on that. MLB, I might be placing a bet on the Dodgers to make the World Series as well, given the year that they've had so far in the regular season. I'm going to be using it for all my MMA bets. Loving when a good fight's coming up. The Nate Diaz fight coming up this Saturday. Going to be putting a nice wager on that through BetOnline. Head on over to BetOnline today or use your mobile device to join today and make your first sports bet. Use our promo code BELIEVE50 to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. What is up, Bruin Bible listeners? Will Decker, your host here. We got the madman in the house. He went out to Boulder to watch Colorado take on your UCLA Bruins. It was a resounding 45-17 victory. A lot of positives there, but Madman, give me kind of just how the Boulder trip was and how everything was going for you guys out there.
Well, such a great time out in Boulder. You know, it's such a great college town, you know, probably one of the best five best college towns in America and maybe arguably like the best one in the West Coast. You know, just such a beautiful sight. My wife, Ashley, did grad school at CU Boulder. So, you know, we always have kind of our favorite spots for coffee and, you know, cocktails and dinner and whatnot. And then having Ryan out there as well, we had sort of a wonderful time kind of tailgating, being at the game, experiencing a really good UCLA crowd. Lots of LA transplants now in Denver. So a lot of UCLA alumni at the game who are based in Denver. We had a couple thousand strong there and in the visitor section and peppered all around. So just a lovely weekend and such a great venue for college football and always so great to see the Bruins do so well. We're 4-0 and Will, now the preseason ends and the season can really begin.
Four games, 4-0. That's all you can ask for. First 4-0 start in UCLA history since 2015. So we will take that as fans of the Bruins. You were sitting in the UCLA section, and it was encouraging to hear. We were talking right before we got in the air. The Bruins fans travel well. You mentioned that a lot of transplants from Denver out there. How many would you estimate were making up, you know, the Bruins section when it came to, you know, the famous Folsom Field?
Thriller, we definitely, you know, there was about the capacity of the game was about 42,000. And so, you know, it was a good crowd all over and have to give – CU fans so much credit as well. You know, they really came out strong. You know, it's obviously we've talked about what a tough year and start it's been for them, but you know, them supporting their team was really commendable. And I think that we had about 3,000 or 4,000 strong there in the visitor section. And so very deep baby blue and gold, lots of opportunities to take picture with Joe Bruin and the dance girls. There was some Colorado sort of the Buffalo Cowboys, you know, who helped Ralphie run out there middle of the third quarter. Will, they sort of sheepishly walk down to sort of the UCLA sideline and ask for pictures with the UCLA cheerleaders, you know. So that was a lovely moment to see. And the UCLA faithful in that section just, you know, loved to see that.
Man, yeah. And, you know, those UCLA girls, they're beautiful and they're smart. You know, they are the Bruin girls. So we love that. I understand why the Colorado people would love you to take a picture with them. 45-17, Madman. And when you really break it down, it probably should have been 45-6. There was a lot of, you know, penalties aiding Colorado's offensive attack. A couple of roughing the passer penalties where could have gone either way on some of those. A targeting penalty that eventually ejected Grayson Murphy within the first half. So just a lot of penalties. I think that's an area that we can clean up. But other than that, it was a pretty, you know, just dominant game all around. And, you know, we're not going to make, you know, a huge statement here saying that Colorado is some, you know, top 25 opponent. But the more important thing is we did what we were supposed to do, Madman. And it was really encouraging. Over 500 yards of total offense for the Bruins. Defense made plays when they had to. The pass rush, which we will get into when it comes to game balls. A guy actually balled the hell out for UCLA, which is very, very exciting to see. But give me kind of your takes on the offense and defense and what you saw for the Bruins, because I'm struggling to find an area where we didn't, you know, have a near perfect game.
Yeah, Will, I think you said it. I mean, I think going into the game, there were sort of three areas that we sort of wanted to see kind of collectively. One was the ability for DTR to be able to pepper the ball all over, really have a clean sheet kind of game, be very smooth in terms of where he wanted to go with the football, be very decisive, have kind of a 75% to 80% completion type of game. You know, we look up, he's 19 for 23, check, right? Then the second thing we really wanted to see that you and I talked about in great detail is for, you know, Mr. Charbonnet to have the Will Decker historic season that he is destined to have. This has to be the game where he now elevates himself statistically, kind of gets into a flow. 9 carries, 104 yards, 3 touchdowns. You know, all the shades of Hawaii last year. He had touchdown runs of 45, 36, and 13. Just all levels of the defense. Looked phenomenal. And then could rest the final quarter and a half of the game. Check. Right? And then the third big thing we wanted to really see was, based on what happened the week before, is this defense going to be able to get pressure on the quarterback, disrupt the flow of what the offense wanted to do? And obviously between, you know, Latu and Murphy, and we'll get into the details there, but overall, the team had 5 sacks, 8 tackles for loss, and numerous quarterback hurries. So check there as well. So overall, we did what we wanted to do. Never were behind in the game, never were really threatened in the game. And so obviously we played a team that we were better than significantly, but we also played like the team that we were, you know, we were better than our opponents. So that's all you can do in these types of situations. So overall, probably the most complete performance for the Bruins this season.
Yeah. And like you said, I think, you know, playing against Bowling Green opening weekend, playing against South Alabama, our third game, we weren't playing at times like the team that should be winning. So just to have kind of that, you know, confirmation that they came out, they started the first half in a great way, which has not been the case for the first 3 games of the season, which I think was huge. Dorian Thompson-Robinson, that was the game where he looked the most in command this year. And it's encouraging to see that as soon as we enter Pac-12 play. I tweeted this out. The throw he made to Matt Sykes, that 24-yard, that may be – I really have to go back and evaluate that. That may be the best throw I've ever seen from him. Corner coming up, just trailing Matt Sykes. Safety over the middle kind of coming in. You got a tight window to fit that in there. And, man, he could not – he hit a perfect – bow on the dartboard on that one. So Dorian Thompson-Robinson making a big-time throw there, 19 to 23 through the air. That's an 83% completion rate, so he was doing really well there. And, you know, if not for a sack, he would have had over 70 yards of rushing, as the sacks in the college game, it actually takes away from the rushing production. So Dorian was looking very, very good. Charbonnet, my goodness. The prediction we had was pretty spot on when we go – and it's the clip that we've gotten a 1,000-plus views on, thanks to, you know, Bruin Bible listeners. We go, we want Charbonnet to kind of be – just have that back-breaking run where they take him out in the early second half and everything goes. And that is exactly what happened, Madman. A 46-yard run to kind of capitalize on that. And, my God, he put that safety, just gave him a couple moves on the outside – safety dropped like it was an Allen Iverson crossover, and Charbonnet just had a nice little house call at the top of it. Charbonnet, I mean, Madman, the second touchdown run he had too, when he broke 3 tackles, it looked like the movie where Superman is just having bullets deflect off of him. I do not envy anyone trying to tackle this guy. I'm just in awe of what Charbonnet can do when he is rolling at full steam ahead. We needed this game from Charbonnet after kind of a disappointing South Alabama game. But, man, the Terminator always delivers. What was it like to see some of those runs in person? Because I was blown away, you know, streaming from my laptop going, this guy is just out of this world.
Well, it was electric, Will. And, you know, being on the UCLA side of the field, it was almost like a symphony you know, because especially on that run, you know, that you described, you know, the 46 yarder where he had that defender, that final defender on skates for about the last 10 yards. You know, it was, you mentioned kind of the great AI crossover. You know, there's that famous run of Barry Sanders on Thanksgiving Day where the defender keeps turning to the right and then he goes to the left and he turns to the left and he turns back to the right. And that's exactly kind of how it felt. And the crowd was like, oh, you know, it was sort of this sort of, you know, it was almost like an orchestra because we were all, we thought that was the move. And then guess what? There was another move after that. And so just to see his burst live was really significant. And I think the key with Charbonnet is, you know, all three of those touchdown runs, he had really great blocking up front and was able to get to the second level of the defense. And so when he gets that 4 or 5 yards head of steam live, Will, you can see it live, where once he's got, he can put his cleats in the ground 4 or 5 times and get that momentum going, it's an impossibility for the first guy to bring him down, and very often an improbability that the second guy is going to bring him down. And that's really what we saw there, which was quite remarkable to see. And this is what we've been waiting for, and to have it, you know, right before kind of this gauntlet of 3 games, right before a short week, just what the doctor ordered. And Will, if I can just add to the Dorian throw that you mentioned with Sykes, really phenomenal ball, as you mentioned. And it's not like that was a 10 or an 11 yard in where he's darting it. You know, that was a 24 yard pass. And, you know, when you sort of drop back, you know, and he was sort of surveying the field, and it was relatively sort of deep, couple yards deep into the end zone. That was a 30-yard ball that had very little air under it, had to go through a tight window. You said it right. You know, you messaged us right away. That was an NFL throw and probably the best quarterback throw we have seen DTR make in terms of the schematics of the play. So to see just all of that variety live and in person was really encouraging. As we move into now this next stretch,
Dorian took it up a notch going into Pac-12 play. And he may have heard kind of the noise that has been going around. It's like, maybe does this offense, you know, operate a little bit better with Garbers? Seeing what I saw from Dorian this weekend, I know it's Colorado, but you got to just beat the opponent in front of you. That gives me confidence that Dorian is going to come into Washington ready and prepared on a Friday night lights game at the Rose Bowl. And, you know, we got to get the Rose Bowl packed this next weekend on Friday night, because this is a ranked opponent. This is the first real test for the Bruins. I think if they can win this, you know, we saw Oregon's pretty beatable. I know Bo Nix pulled a game out, you know, for Oregon on 2 drives that were pretty fantastic, but Oregon looks beatable. The Pac-12, call me crazy, it may actually be better than it has been in terms of the amount of good teams they have. Over the last decade, I count 5 or 6 solid teams. I think Oregon State should have definitely been ranked. SC's doing what SC's doing. UCLA is 4-0. Washington State, you know, beat Wisconsin. You have Washington, and then you have, you know, Oregon as well. That's 7 solid teams.
Yeah, and you didn't even mention the preseason favorite there, Will, in Utah. You know, so it's
exactly
7 teams. It's a great point. The depth of the conference this year, I think, is really significant, more than in years past. And I think we're seeing this sort of jockeying for position, Will, where I think the teams that we thought were going to be sort of clearly above the rest, just based on last year's rankings and based on reputation, that's not quite the case. And so when you look at what's in front of UCLA and these 3 games and kind of SC at the end, those are kind of the 4 games that will determine where UCLA ends up this year, because the other games should be chalk, you know. And so you're sort of starting your baseline assessment here at 8-4. And so you're like, well, if you split, you go 10-2, you go 3-1, maybe it's 11-1. And, you know, there's just, everything is still in front of this team, and they have it on their racket. They control their destiny. And I think the great thing about it is, even in the 4 games that are the challenging games over the course of this season, 3 of them are at home. And so, you know, you get that. And so it's really important.
Yeah. And I think just as a UCLA fan too, just to see USC kind of struggle a little bit, they were able to gut it out. That's encouraging, because from what I saw the first 3 weeks of the season, this SC team, it's like, wow, we're going to have to put up 45, 50 points just to even compete with these guys. If our front 7 shows up like it showed against Colorado, there's a real chance we can give Caleb Williams some problems. So I'm very, very excited.
You know, Will, for that piece of it, you know, and then we'll get into the schematics. From a UCLA fan perspective, that night game, you know, that Pac-12 night game, Oregon State, USC, gave me all kinds of Rocky IV memories when, you know, Rocky's go and, you know, SC the first 3-4 weeks of the season has felt like Ivan Drago. And it was the first time, you know, when, so, you know, Rocky cuts Drago and then they come back in, you know, in their corners and the trainer's like, you see, he's not a machine. He's a man and you can inflict some pain. And I think last night felt that way for UCLA fans and fans across the Pac-12, that this isn't a machine, that they are beatable. They're exposable in certain areas. And so that needs to be also very encouraging for UCLA with the schedule in front of them.
And this is why we have the Madman on, for Rocky IV references, my guy. We need a training montage video of UCLA running through the Russian mountains like they did, like the 5-minute training montage they do in Rocky IV for us going into that USC game. So a lot of good things coming up for that. Madman, this is one of my favorite parts of the show that we do. We're going to do game balls. And you lead us off. You were the guy in Boulder making the trek as a UCLA alum at the game. A lot of things to be proud of as a fan of UCLA, coming in there and doing our job. Lots of different areas we can go with a game ball here, my man. Who are you starting off with? I may have a feeling we may have already started with him.
Well, you know, obviously there's you know, Charbonnet, I'm sure we're you know, we've talked a lot about him. But I think the guy who really, I think, disrupted the game and really established UCLA's dominance in this game over time was Liatu Latu. And, you know, his ability, you know, the 4 tackles, 3 sacks, 3.5 tackles for loss, just was constantly in the backfield, disrupting everything that Colorado wanted to do. You know, what was interesting, Will, was there was a lot of juice in the building, a lot of electricity in the building, because only about 90 minutes before kickoff did Colorado announce that Luke McCown, true freshman, son of Josh McCown, was going to be the starting quarterback. You know, there was still sort of, well, is it going to be Brandon Lewis? Is it going to be JT Shroud? And the thinking was there. So there was a lot of juice in the building. They saw him in warmups. He's a lefty. He's kind of a smaller guy. So, you know, a lot of excitement to start that game. Colorado had the ball first. They actually moved the ball for 5.5 minutes on their first drive and missed a field goal. So there was still this optimism in the air the first 6 or 7 minutes of the game. And then Latu's ability to get into the backfield and just, you could tell McCown's confidence over the course of the next, you know, 10, 15 minutes of the game really eroded, because he was feeling the footsteps. He was feeling the pressure. It was hard for him to hold on to the ball when he was getting hit. He was looking very unsure of himself in scramble situations. And that was because Latu was just constantly in his grill. I mean, for McCown, it almost felt like they were slow dancing at a prom, you know. And so it was, you know, Latu coming through. This is what we wanted to see, Will. You know, when this team is humming, it's Latu, the Murphy twins, and Carl Jones Jr. provide that pass rush. And if those four guys can be humming together, this is a very significant pass rush for the Bruins. So Latu, again, the 3 sacks, the 3.5 tackles for loss, just totally disrupted the game.
What a story, too, because the last time he has played meaningful football was actually in 2019. He had a neck injury where he had surgery on, and they went to 5 different physicians. Just remind you, this is a former 5-star prospect, Liatu Latu, who went to the Washington Huskies, didn't work out there. All 5 physicians said you should retire from playing football. Latu found a way to get back on the field. He's got 5 sacks in 4 games, Madman. I'm not a scientist. I'm not a stats expert. But if you have more sacks than games played, you're doing something right when it comes to the pass rushing position. And just the dominance he possessed. I mean, he forced the fumble, the strip sack, like you talked about, 3.5 tackles for a loss, 3 sacks. There are flashes there that make me believe that this could be the best pure pass rusher UCLA has had, likely since an Anthony Barr. And I know that's a big statement. This guy came in, you know, a highly touted prospect. He's just kind of finding his footing again. Footing's not even the right word. This guy is landing an Evel Knievel jump instead of finding your footing. Like, this guy is balling out on a different level. Liatu Latu is the star of the game. And you mentioned just the other people we had, you know, going for UCLA this past weekend. And, you know, you had Grayson Murphy getting a sack in two tackles for loss. Gabriel Murphy had a sack off the edge that got negated, you know, due to some BS penalty, you know, an offsides call. So those guys are clicking. And even if Carl Jones did not get a sack, he was athletic enough to go back and get an interception off the defensive line. The lone interception of the game from a first game starter in Owen McCown for Colorado. Just an incredible effort from this front four. And we've had different players. We've had, you know, Odighizuwa in recent years. We've had, you know, Otito Obanya was very good for us last year. But the collection of talent to get to the quarterback is as good as we've had in about 5 to 10 years for the Bruins. So I love that. Excellent first pick, Madman. Second game ball, we talked about a lot, Charbonnet. And I almost feel like we didn't give them the ball enough, because you look at the numbers, 9 carries, 104 yards. This guy's averaging 11.6 yards a carry. Think about that. That every time this man touched the ball on average is a first down plus an extra yard or two when he's doing it. And we mentioned, you know, the 46-yarder where he, you know, shook a safety out of his socks and shoes in the middle of the field. And, you know, he bounced off these guys like a bowling ball, you know, going to the end zone. The first touchdown, we didn't even really get into. He had some moves out there that a man of that size should not be able to make. And, you know, he had this one where he cut out, went up the middle, cut it out to the right side, shook a guy to the left, and then he had a safety and he shook in and then shook out again. How many 225, 230-pound backs can make the move that Zach Charbonnet was able to make in the open field there? Because I was just like, my jaw was on the floor watching that go out live. 9 carries, 104 yards, 3 touchdowns. And frankly, Colorado's lucky it wasn't worse, because they only gave him – they gave him less than 10 carries. And this guy, outside of maybe Latu, was the best player on the field by a mile. So just an incredible, incredible performance by Zach Charbonnet. I want to ask you, because you are the UCLA alum, you know, I think we can go back and just look at the variety of different running backs that have been drafted. Your Jonathan Franklins, your Perkins, your Feltons, your Britton Browns, your Maurice Jones-Drews. I mean, it goes down and down and down. Is he the most talented running back you've ever seen as a Bruins fan? Because I wasn't around for, you know, some of the early years of UCLA. But it's hard for me to imagine a more talented back than this guy has with the size and shiftiness he possesses.
Thriller, it's a great question. I think he's the most NFL-ready back UCLA has had in a very long time. I think in terms of talent, pound-for-pound talent, I think it's a very close race between him and Maurice Jones-Drew. Because I think folks forget that, you know, MJD was 5'7", 5'8". And, you know, he was basically track star speed, but he was so thick in terms of low center of gravity and just weight distribution that he was like a little bull in a china shop. And it was so hard to even bring him down. So he sort of had this very unique, like, you know, compact power and then the burst ability. And then when you sort of factor in exactly what you said with Charbonnet, just the strength, the power, but then those feet. Well, you know, and he reminds me so much of a young Jerome Bettis with those feet. And I've mentioned that before. And so I think those two guys, pound for pound, are, you know, just very, very unique. Franklin was amazing, obviously all-time leading rusher for UCLA. Perkins was great. We've had Kelly was, you know, had that iconic performance against SC, the 289 yards. We've had Felton, who was kind of this hybrid receiver running back. But I think if you gave me a choice and said, well, who was the greatest of them all? It's really close race between Charbonnet and MJD, and they both are kind of a cut above everybody else.
And to your credit with MJD, phenomenal back. He had 3 years of work. He only had 1,000-yard season, you know, as a tailback. Yeah. So, you know, he's very talented. He had an incredible pro career. I think we're kind of basing this off who's the most pro-talented running back. But I think there's a scenario. And it, by the way, if Charbonnet got to 5 touchdowns – this game, I was going to go skip picks touchdown record. It's on, man. I was going to send the text message out, because if he got to 5 and it was looking very plausible, you know, with just how bad this Colorado defense is, to all their credit. But man, I've never seen a running back, you know, from that Hawaii game, that opening game that we saw, the LSU game last year, even the SC game last year, which is, I think people saw Dorian and his great game.
Right.
I think that's one of the most unsung performances in the history of the UCLA-USC game, because he got 160 yards on the ground, and it was easy for him that game. You know, it's not talked about enough. 160 yards, two touchdowns on his own. You know, everyone was getting touchdowns that game, but I just think the Charbonnet performance for, you know, the Dorian Hurdle and the six touchdowns, and, you know, the Kaz Allen game, I think, is even talked about more than a Charbonnet performance.
Right, right.
So, like, I think it was just a little bit swept under the rug. For me, as somebody that's, you know, a little bit newer to covering UCLA football, that's one of the most underrated performances we've had as a fan of the Bruins in recent years, where you look back at the stats and you go, holy shit, this guy balled the hell out, but it's not being talked about enough. So Charbonnet, man, I just – seeing what he can do and how he can make defenders miss, it's just something I've never seen. So I got to give him game ball number two. Charbonnet, man, myth, and legend. Love it. Madman, you're up for game ball number two. Who are you going with, my man?
Thriller, it's interesting. And, you know, you talked about even Charbonnet could have gotten to five touchdowns, and I completely agree with that. I think the person who stopped Charbonnet the most was Chip a little bit, even in that, you know, I think the key moment there was that fourth drive where, you know, UCLA had gone three straight touchdowns, and there was a fourth and short at the Colorado 32. And, you know, going for it, it was about fourth and two, but had Keegan Jones going for it, you know, and gave the ball to Keegan Jones. And that's, you have the Terminator for a reason. So that could have easily been touchdown number four on that drive and that sequence. But nevertheless, Charbonnet, of course, is very special. Here's where it gets interesting, Thriller. I think that there's a lot to be good to go in different directions. I'm going to give a game ball to Dorian Thompson-Robinson. I think that, you know, this was really a complete game. We talked the 19 for 23. He had the two touchdowns. I think, you know, we had all these murmurs about, you know, is he sort of ready to make that step, make that jump? You know, could we potentially even be better off with Garbers at quarterback? I think he demonstrated just the poise. He, you know, what I'm really loving about this version of DTR this season is just how much he's peppered the ball around. And eight touchdown passes, Will, on the season for Dorian through four games. Eight different wide receivers have caught a touchdown pass from him. And, you know, so to me, the identity of this team is now starting to become very established, where it's Charbonnet is going to be the bell cow. We're going to start using Dorian more in the run game, and it's going to be a quick passing game. And where we're going to get you isn't that it's going to be underneath stuff, but where we're going to get you is you don't know who's going to get the ball. And I think that there's still sort of a leaning towards Jake Bobo when in difficult situations, difficult moments, he's going to be wide receiver one. But outside of that, I think this ability to sort of create the mystery horizontally, if you're not going to create the mystery vertically of being able to throw to all levels of the field, I think what Chip has found is he wants to create the mystery horizontally, and eight different guys now have shown that, you know, they can catch a touchdown pass. And that doesn't even mention Ezekiel, who maybe had the single great highlight of the game where he hurdled the guy. That had the loudest, you know, noise from the UCLA fan base yesterday, Will, was Ezekiel kind of clear hurdling that Colorado linebacker. And, you know, he's certainly capable of getting into the end zone. So Dorian being able to pepper it around, you know, we've been harsh on him the first couple of weeks, so definitely deserves to get his due. Hopefully the first of many game balls over the course of this season.
Yeah, I mean, almost 300 yards of total offense, 83% completion rate. And the most important thing for me as someone looking on that, you know, studies the Bruins, first three touchdown drives, 64 yards, 95 yards, and a 75-yard touchdown drive. This is all in the first half. We snapped our fingers and we were up 21-3. The greatest quarterbacks are the captains of the ship. They command the offense. They get the ball down the field and they make plays. And Thompson Robinson did all three of those on Saturday. So big, big game from our guy, DTR. He is, you know, this is the version of him we want to see coming into his fifth year of Pac-12 play. So I'm very, very pumped that DTR was able to do that. Madman, I think for my second game ball, I've got a guy that I just was not expecting to break out. And That goes to Matt Sykes. Matt Sykes, 2 years. 2 years in this system, you know, playing sporadically. He had four catches and 33 yards in his first 2 years combined. In the first half on Saturday, he had four catches, 48 yards, and a touchdown before getting pulled. Great story. Made a phenomenal touchdown catch on a better ball from Dorian Thompson-Robinson. But it's just these type of stories. And you mentioned just the peppering around of the football that DTR has been able to do. Sykes, I mean, I had to like Google who number 12 was when he got into the end zone because I was so unfamiliar with it. This is somebody that covers the Bruins. So it was really refreshing to see Matt Sykes kind of break out. 6'4" wide receiver from Hawaii, kind of making an impact now. So big, big game for Matt Sykes. And it just shows that we have another guy in the receiving room that can make plays. Here's how I'm going to spin it to you, Madman. We do not have maybe that upper echelon receiver, as you know, maybe the Oregon State has with the Treshawn Harrison, or USC has with Jordan Addison, or you know, even the Washington, you know, receiver room, which we're gonna have to cover this week on Wednesday. But I think as a unit, 6-7 guys strong, we got the tight end room healthy again with Ezekiel, Habermill, Carson Ryan. I think this is a top two, top three receiving room in the Pac-12, and I'm willing to stand on that. You know, all bias aside, just given how deep this receiving room is and how many different guys can make plays for this offense, Madman.
No, Will, I think it's a great point. I mean, I think depth, certainly, this is, you know, you have to be talking about this top three, you know, in the conference for sure. And I think this is another opportunity where this is where Chip Kelly gets a lot of credit because, you know, his ability to identify different ways of not just being able to move the ball, get the ball in the hands of different playmakers, but also get them to buy in that this is going to be a wide receiver room by committee. Look what's happening across town, Will, just as a frame of reference. Obviously, you've got Addison and Mario Williams. Gary Bryan Jr. recently announced that he's going to redshirt and probably transfer because he's not getting enough touches. And so, you know, that where this is where, you know, where oftentimes the media and others are sort of critical of Chip and point out his deficiencies. But this is an opportunity to highlight his strengths, that not only can he make this work from a schematic standpoint, but he's able to make this work culturally because, you know, it's not easy to be able to have a receiving room that's this deep. And then when you throw in the tight ends, Will, I mean, you're talking about 12 to 14 guys that can legitimately be a number one option on any one play. That takes not just sort of the analytical mind, but that also takes the mind, you know, that qualitative mind to sort of build that culture, build that buy-in and that teamwork. So, you know, really kudos to Chip Kelly for being able to do this. I don't recall a UCLA team in recent memory that has a receiving room this deep. We've had guys that have been better, you know, at the top end, you know, receivers. But depth-wise, this is maybe the deepest it's been. And I also think that the head of that snake still has not really been able to show everything that he can do. And I think he's going to be able to do that in these next 3 weeks, and that's Jake Bobo. We've seen flashes of what Bobo can do, in particular in that South Alabama game and whatnot. But I really believe that he is the captain of that receiving ship, and we're going to be able to see that more and more moving forward. But kudos to Chip on this. As something that's a sort of underrated element of his coaching ability.
And, I mean, you nailed it. Bobo, well on his way to a 100-yard performance if they kept him in the ballgame. Four catches, 53 yards of offense for UCLA there. Madman, you're down to your last game ball. Who are you going with and why for our UCLA Bruins?
So, Will, the way, you know, every team sort of has their victory mascot. You know, I remember the mid-2000s Detroit Pistons, you know, when Darko Milicic entered the game, it was like the game's over. You know, when the Lakers had Slava Medvedenko. When Medvedenko got in the game, you know, the game was on ice. You know, when Red Auerbach would light up the cigar, you know, in Boston Garden, you know, the Celtics had the game won. And UCLA has that element now in Mr. Yankoff. Okay, I'm giving him a second game ball. Will, let me ask you this question. We follow the Bruins. We are probably two of the top five folks in terms of following the Bruins in this city, in terms of kind of nationally. If I told you 33% of the way into the season, 4 out of 12 games, the person that will have lead this team in touchdown receptions is Colton Yankoff, what odds would you give me there? And so, you know, to see him be able to catch not only Dorian's second touchdown, but then catch Garber's touchdown pass on similar plays was just great to see. And he's such a talented kid, multidimensional. He can catch, he can run. He came to UCLA as a quarterback. So let's give some love to Mr. Yankoff.
I was fired up. First touchdown happens, I'm going nuts in my room. And then the second one goes, I mean, we were losing our mind as fans of UCLA. Colson Yankoff, just a great story. And I don't think it's being talked about enough how good of a teammate he is, because he entered college as a top 100 prospect as a quarterback. You know, I think he put his ego aside for the team just to kind of help them out in a variety of different ways. The quarterback room was pretty stacked at UCLA. He was just trying to find different ways to get on the field. He's a running back, receiver kind of combo, and he's making the most of it. He's coming in, and the coach is rewarding him with play calls coming his way, you know, for the consummate teammate that he is. So, Colson Yankoff, it's a fun story. We love talking about it. But I want to give that kid props, because that's not an easy job to do, to put your ego aside for the team. So, Colson Yankoff really making a difference there. We are down to the last game ball of the Colorado week. And, you know, looking at it, I think there's one area that, you know, we talk about the front seven that UCLA has been able to provide. And I think a lot of people would think I'm going to go with Grayson Murphy, or I'm not going to do that, even though he's well-deserving of it, 2 tackles for a loss, a sack. I'm actually looking at the 2 linebackers. I'm going to give a hybrid game ball. John Vaughn's Darius Mwasau, and they have set the tone when it comes to the run game. We're 2 leading tacklers on Saturday, and just what they were doing in terms of setting the tone when it comes to the run game, 34 carries for Colorado on the ground, 51 yards on the ground. They were stifling this run game, you know, allowed a touchdown to Owen McCown on, you know, kind of a little PA, but other than that, we're pretty spotless when it came to that. Got to give credit where it's due. John Vaughns and Mwasa have taken a step forward. And I don't think it's by coincidence, because they have a guy like Ken Norton Jr. coaching up this defense. Give me your thoughts on Mwasa and John Vaughns and how they looked.
Well, Will, you know, Mwasa, we felt so confident about his ability to captain this defense even into the preseason. And he looked like, you know, he had tremendous command of the defense. And it was something we specifically looked for and wanted to see in the preview show. And I think what's been really interesting has been this sort of hybrid role that John Vaughns is playing. And it's just very interesting. It's sort of a nuanced role where, you know, he's a linebacker. Sometimes he even plays safety. You know, he does all of these sort of different things. And he sort of brings kind of that Quantrez Knight kind of hybrid role from last year, but just in a very different way that's very unique to his skill set. And, you know, Will, his emergence, I think, is going to be critical moving forward as we get into some of these tougher games. Because one of the things that a trend that we're starting to notice here in the Pac-12 around the conference the first couple of weeks is there's a lot of coaches that want to match up really skilled running backs on linebackers out of the pass game. You saw that a lot in the Oregon-Washington State game. You saw that a lot in the SC Oregon State game. You saw that a lot in the Stanford Washington game. And so, you know, Shane Lee, you know, a friend of LAFB, was really getting picked on last night by Oregon State and similarly others. And so when you have a guy like John Vaughns, who actually has these sort of secondary type instincts, but can also play linebacker, you can eliminate some of those preferences that these offensive coordinators are having more into the second half of the season. And he's going to be really critical to some of these key down and distance plays once we play higher competition. And Will, I think, you know, I think this defense is still kind of scratching the surface of what it can be, because when you just look at this on paper, and we talked about the Murphy twins and Carl Jones Jr. and Latu from kind of that pass rush perspective, then you look at the second level and you see a Vaughns and you see a Mwasau. And we haven't even really talked about Bo Calvert very much. And then you go into the secondary and you see our guy Kirkwood and Azizi Hearn and Davies. You know, why can't this team really lean on the defense as a strength moving forward. And so I think we're still just scratching the surface of what this team can be defensively. But it was really encouraging to see John Bonds and Mwasa in particular coming through. And so couldn't agree with you more.
And that is the conclusion of the game, Balls, as well as this week's Bruin Bible. Big week on tap for LA Football Network. We're going to be live at the Rose Bowl for this Washington-UCLA game. Going to be working. We can work remotely on Friday for my day job. So I'm going to be down in Pasadena for the afternoon, making a quick trek over to the Rose Bowl parking lot to tailgate with this guy to my right and Ryan Dyrud in the house. Draft is in session coming back this week as well. We got Brentley Weissman from the NFL Draft Network. So that'll be very, very fun to talk with him. And yeah, another Bruin Bible this week. We're going to try to get either a Seattle Times writer on here, or somebody that's close to the Washington Huskies to kind of give us a preview. They're looking very good. They demolished a pretty solid Stanford team last night. So this is going to be a very, very fun battle. Madman, any last thoughts before we get on to Husky Week? A very fun week for UCLA fans.
Thriller, just only 21 teams in America are 4-0, and UCLA is one of them. And UCLA has the third longest winning streak in the country now with 7 games in a row. So we're working through victories. Great time to be a UCLA fan, and can't wait for Friday night.
Can't wait. Bruin Bible, we are